is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
I always thought the phrase was save the drama for your mama, but they are airing all the dirty laundry in the NFL right now. Welcome in to the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi out on the East Coast at his office. I'm Stormy Bonantoni at our VSiN studio at Circa Resort and Casino. Michael, what is going on right now off the field in the NFL? My goodness.
My Lord, you know, I mean, where's Don Henley? You know, he wrote that song, Dirty Laundry. I mean, like, seriously, this is the time and the place for it, right? You know, I mean, he could have been an actor. I ended up here. I used to look good. I don't have to be clear. You know, I mean, it's just perfect, right? I mean, it's just perfect. It's everybody's using the media to tell their side of the story. And it's interesting. I was reading this book. It's called Freezing Order. It's about this gentleman named Bill Browder, who was running a hedge fund in Russia, and he got into a lot of problems because his hedge fund was making money, and the Russian government taxed him. He paid his taxes, but then they stole the money, and they wouldn't allow him back in the country. So he's on the Interpol wanted list from Russia, but it's a ridiculous case. And he got arrested one day in Spain. And so he used the media, Twitter, to basically say, I'm being unfairly. And next thing you know, he was free. So I get that side of using the media. I don't get this one. Like, I think less said is better.
I agree. Every now and then, less is more. It's okay to have a Bill Belichick approach every now and then and just keep things inside and keep things within the team. We'll get into all the news and notes, all of the things and the developments that have happened with the Jonathan Taylor in Indianapolis situation, Aaron Rodgers on the back end giving a little respect to his head coach after all the comments came out with Sean Payton, contract disputes that we need to get into, but we'll also have a little bit of college football today, which will be a nice change up as we get set for a day away now from August starting, which means the start of college football as well. Matt Eumanns is going to join us in hour two, VSiN senior editor and writer, host of VSiN Tonight as well. In hour two, we'll also have our NFL wideout, Mike Pritchard, VSiN lead NFL analyst, join us that hour as well. But let's get right into it, because after we got off the air yesterday and we talked plenty of running backs, we talked plenty of the Jonathan Taylor, Jim Irsay situation. Exactly. We have more now because Mike Chappell of Fox 59 and Indy, the first to report it. But he said that the Colts were considering placing Jonathan Taylor on the non-football injury list per a source. He suffered some type of back injury while working out in Arizona, also still rehabbing from the January ankle injury. So he's currently put on PUP. Jonathan Taylor comes back on Twitter, utilizing it to his advantage, right? As you referenced there, says one, never had back pain. Two, never reported back pain. Not sure who sources are, but find new ones. And I heard listening to the radio this morning, Michael, Stephen Holder, who was kind of the second to report this news on ESPN, sources are good, is what he says when it comes to the back. How are you unpacking all of this information? And again, like, there's this weird need for everything to be publicly ugly, and I don't understand it.
Well, it's the only leverage they have, right? So if you're I forget the name of his agency that represents him. When we go back to April 19th and we look into his comments about, you know, I put the pen to paper, that's where I am right now. I made an obligation to them and they made an obligation to me. And now this thing has gone all upside down. And a lot of it is because there's a sympathy out there for running backs. People feel sorry they're not making enough money. I mean, and there's a media surge to tell this story. Even though nobody wants to look at the facts, they just want to tell the story. And remember this, don't get in the way of the story, even though it's not, some of this isn't true. And so Taylor, I think, and his agent are taking advantage of it. The one thing I do know, when you report to training camp like Taylor did, he took a physical. And at that moment, he didn't pass his physical because of his ankle. If he would have claimed he had a back injury at that moment, they would have had the choice of putting him on NFI or PUP. They chose PUP. Now, if he came in 3 days after they failed him on the physical and said, my back bothered me, which maybe happened here, now they could put him on the NFI list, which means his contract gets cold. They don't have to pay him until at least he gets healthy. So, you know, to me, I'm always wondering, what's the end game here? What is the end game for Jonathan Taylor? The end game is to stop the nonsense and go back to what he said on April 19th. You got a contract, get healthy, have a good year, and see what happens. Because you signed a four-year contract. That's what it is. And the market is what it is.
Right.
No one's going to overpay you just because Twitter thinks it's ridiculous you're not making money.
Well, and that's why we obviously criticize Jim Irsay for a lot of the comments and being so public with what he's saying. But he's not wrong in a lot of the things that he said, right? Like the collective bargaining agreement is what it is. That's not going to come up to be renegotiated for another 7 years the way that things sit right now. Yes, it's unfortunate that the way that it was bargained, despite the cap going up $83 million plus dollars over the last handful of years, that the running back position is the only one that's gone down compared to every other position. But again, that's what was agreed upon, so you have to go from there. With Jonathan Taylor, what he did sign, put pen to paper, and talked about in April when it comes to his contract and not allowing this to be a distraction, the only things that have really changed in that time, to your point, the agent, having his new agent, Malachi Kawa of First Round Management, the name there, and the Zoom call. So clearly a very different shift in philosophy with his new representation. And we saw that when Jim Irsay put out that tweet about the collective bargaining agreement, not naming Jonathan Taylor, just saying running backs in general, capitalistic society, this is what the deal is right now. Him coming back with the quote tweet saying, well, you know, what's actually bad is not paying your top player. So,
well, I mean, like, I don't know what to say. It's like, yes, you're our top player. Okay, great. You are our top player, and we'll pay you what the top running back market is. Is it 12.5? Is it 12.6? Is it 12? Is it 13? But if you want 17, that's not the market. Right. I mean, that's like having a house that you want to sell in a neighborhood where all the houses in the neighborhood are worth $1 million, and you put your house on the market for $4 million. Now, how would you like that? Like, how would you pay the $4 million for the house? Of course you wouldn't. Every value of the – it's all based on value. It's an economic market. It's Adam Smith. I mean, this is what – you know, we've built this whole system on. It was collectively bargained. And look, there's too many running backs out there. And so supply is high and demand is low, so prices go down.
And the situation –
what can I say?
Yeah, and the situation's not going to be better next year, right? So –
no.
I like what you said yesterday. Probably my favorite line of the show. It's not an injustice. It is what it is. And that's just the fact of the matter
right
now.
And either you accept it or you're going to continue to play this media game, which gets you nowhere. Like, we act as if by talking about it, like we used to in the 70s and the 80s and holdouts, that could really change the tenor of a conversation. But those days, we had no salary cap. Those days, we had no information. Those days, not everybody shared information. It was an independent, you were fighting for yourself, basically. Now we have a collective bargaining agreement. We share all the information. Everybody knows what everybody makes. Everybody knows what's in every contract. And so the numbers come out. And I'm sorry that the running backs don't get paid. But, you know, Joe Mixon took a pay cut. Aaron Jones took a pay cut. Like, they did that because they sensed the market. Either you get with the market or go to play in another league. I mean, I know Jim Irsay's your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving dinner. I get that, right? You know, and he has no problem, you know, misbehaving. But what he says, the substance of what he says is true.
Mm-hmm. On PUP, where things sit right now, Jonathan Taylor is. He is out there in Indy. We'll see if there are any more developments as we move further along here. The win total for the Indianapolis Colts currently setting at 6.5. This is a team that obviously goes through the run game, and there is a young quarterback in Anthony Richardson who's trying to figure things out. Would certainly be an advantage for him to have a top-tier guy at the position in that offense. And if I'm Shane Steichen, I'm really ticked off right now that this is my first time as a head coach. I'm rolling into Indy thinking I've got this young quarterback that's just got the potential. like crazy. What could we do if things come together over the next couple of years? And then I'm starting off my coaching career with a controversy of one of my best players.
Well, and plus your best player wasn't your best player last year. There was no best players on the team, right? I mean, he had a bad season. Let's put it in perspective. 2 years ago, he was great. But the reality that Jonathan Taylor is going to make Anthony Richardson a better player is a false reality, because until Anthony Richardson proves he can throw the ball from the pocket and make plays in the pass, everybody's going to gear up for the run anyway. So, you know, whether you have Anthony Richardson or you have another, you sign Kareem Hunt, who, you know, they're going to have a back there. I just think, to me, there's no end game here for him. So let's take it. Say he holds out and his agent determines that he needs to act like this. So he misses the season. He doesn't play well. Like, what team in the league wants somebody who's been a jerk on their team? Mm-hmm. Like, the answer is, I don't want another. I got enough jerks here. I don't need to deal with it. Your problem. You deal with it, right?
You don't want to give up picks, have to pay, inherit a problem, and inherit what appears to be an agent or a management group that is going to cause more problems, right? So it's just like all of these things adding up that aren't going to make sense for Jonathan Taylor. Again, this is a very developing situation. We'll see how things ultimately play out. We got to take a quick break, but when we return, we will get you the latest on the situation with Aaron Rodgers defending his head coach. Nathaniel Hackett did not like the comments that Sean Payton had to say out there in Denver about what had transpired a season ago. Also, Jerry Jones, speaking of owners talking, nobody does it better than Jerry Jones, and he is standing pat on his feelings with Zach Martin, their offensive guard, in his contract dispute as well. You will not want to miss all that we have to come here on the Lombardi Line. Stay with us.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID. Open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Okay, so Hard Knocks is going to debut here pretty soon. Aaron Rodgers was saying yesterday, hey, it's not so bad having these guys around. He also said some other things as well, Michael. In an interview with NFL Network's Peter Schrager, Rodgers acknowledged the comments that were made from Broncos head coach Sean Payton, where he called last season's work by then head coach Nathaniel Hackett and current Jets offensive coordinator, quote, the worst coaching job in NFL history. Rodgers obviously has had a very close relationship with Hackett, didn't like what he heard. Here's what he had to say in response.
Those comments were very surprising. For a coach to do that to another coach. My love for Hack goes deep. You know, we had some great years together in Green Bay, kept in touch, love him and his family. He's an incredible family man, incredible dad. And on the field, you know, he's arguably my favorite coach I've ever had in the NFL. Yeah. Just his approach to it, how he makes it fun, how he cares about the guys, just how he goes about his business with respect, with leadership, with honesty, with integrity. And it made me feel bad that someone who's accomplished a lot in the league is that insecure that they have to take another man down to set themselves up for some sort of easy fall if it doesn't go well for that team this year. Thought it was way out of line, inappropriate, and I think he needs to keep my coach's names out of his mouth.
What did you think, Michael?
He went all Will Smith.
Exactly.
He went Will Smith on us.
Keep
right?
my wife's name out your mouth.
Yeah, I mean, look, he defended his coach, which you would. And look, let's be honest. I mean, Payton knew there was going to be brushback. I thought the beginning of it, what Aaron said, is so true. I mean, it's not typical for an NFL coach to criticize another NFL coach. It's that doctor agreement that every doctor has. You can't find one doctor criticizing another. So that's it. the reality of it is it was really a poorly coached team last year. And all Sean Payton did, as I've mentioned before, is take the spotlight off of the players and put it on him. He's now accountable. You know, the idea that he had his Fox hat on to me was ridiculous because he's never said anything remotely like that on Fox. So he did this for a reason. It was a tactical reason. There was a strategy behind it. Actually, the guy that I think should be feel the worst is George Payton, the general manager, because he was the guy in charge of the team last year, and he hired all these people, and he was sitting there watching it and didn't do anything about it. You're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. Like, how did he not do something?
Right, and to Payton's initial point, another one of the little sections of that article, there were 20 dirty hands, right? It wasn't like it was just the coaches. There were a lot of people around that were letting things happen, letting Russell do things with having the office on the coach's level and having his own quarterback coach around, all these different things. But at the end of the day, his point was that this wasn't all on Russell Wilson. We have confidence in you. And the way that things were last year isn't going to be what we're going to do this year. And you have me. You have Sean Payton. And we're going to hold ourselves to a different standard and things are going to be different here. When it comes to the Aaron Rodgers side of things, though, how much more does he just continue to endear himself to his teammates, to fans of the Jets, to national media for the way that he stood up for that group?
I mean, look, he's a new Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I barely recognize the guy. I love it. You know, I mean, he did exactly what he I'm sure nobody in Green Bay expected, right? To me, there's two things, right? There's always a question that should get asked that's never asked. Like Sean Payton said, you know, what he said, and somebody should have said, well, why did you retain George Payton if this was so bad? He was in charge. Nobody asked that. The same thing, somebody should have asked Aaron Rodgers about, you know, why are you so different here than you were in Green Bay? I mean, and I think a lot of it has to do with his unhappiness with the front office in Green Bay, starting with Mark Murphy. I think you could see it. I think Murphy, the president of the team, has been a thorn in his side going back to the Jordan Love draft. Because let's be clear, Brian Gutekunst gets a lot of crap for drafting him, and so does Matt LaFleur, Jordan Love. But that was motivated. That was a self-decision that came from the top down, that they wanted a young quarterback because Murphy wants the organization to run through him. So it doesn't surprise me. I've said this all along.
Also, and just one other quick Jets update. We talked about it a little bit yesterday with Dalvin Cook being brought in for a workout. Robert Saleh called it a meet and greet that he did his physical, kind of mingled with different coaches and players, but he also sat there and watched training camp practice, and the crowd was loving Dalvin's presence, started chanting his name. How much would Dalvin Cook move the needle one more step further for the New York Jets, like, especially from an odds perspective and where they currently sit in the division?
Yeah, I don't think it would move it much. I mean, you know, Breece Hall's a good player. Michael Carter's not quite there to where Dalvin Cook is, but it would certainly help their team. But I think the issue is really going to be their offensive line. Yeah. Are they good enough? You know, I think that's the issue. Randall Cobb passed his physical, so he's back with the team now. You know, but they've got to get Dwayne Brown on the field. They've got to get Lakeland Tomlinson. Remember, they went through a bunch of changes with their offensive line. Not only did they fire Mike LaFleur, they fired their offensive line coach who came from San Francisco. So Nathaniel Hackett's operating under a whole new system with new line coach. Now, he had Billy Turner with him, and he was in Green Bay originally, and then he went to Denver. So this line's going to have to go through some changes, and they're going to need to get Mekhi Becton either healthy or get him out of there and figure out that, look, this is just a lost cause.
We've been talking about it, but I don't think that in the big picture it's been talked about enough how critical that offensive line play is going to be for the Jets this season. Win total sitting at 9.5. They are an odds-on favorite, -140 to be a playoff team in 2023, something they haven't done in more than a decade. Now let's keep talking about NFL owners who keep on talking. Jerry Jones, very much like Jim Irsay, brutally honest, I think is a good way to describe Jera. He's standing his ground on the contract holdout for six-time first-team All-Pro guard Zach Martin. When asked what needs to happen for the Zach Martin situation to get resolved, he said, nothing. He'll come to camp when he comes to camp. There's no resolution. There are a lot of consequences if he doesn't. also adds, it's not about precedent, it's about facts. We need the money to pay Micah Parsons. We need the money to pay the players that we have to pay in the future. That's a fact.
True. I mean, he's right. And let's be clear. This whole new collective bargaining agreement that was negotiated by the players and by the agents, okay, and by the owners, really did away with holdouts. I mean, $50,000 fine for missing practice when you're under contract. Now, teams have kind of skirted it in fairness. You know, Nick Bosa may not get fined, and, you know, we see Matt Judon was at camp, but he's really not happy, but he is practicing. Same with Lawrence. We've seen a little bit of the skirting without getting fined. But when you don't show up completely, like Chris Jones isn't showing up, like Zach Martin's not showing up, then the system is basically built to pay heavy fines. And Jerry's right. He's got to pay Micah Parsons, just like they have to pay Nick Bosa. The problem is in San Francisco, they don't have a rookie quarterback under contract. In Dallas, they have Dak Prescott taking a lot of their money. So they've got to be very careful with every dollar, every dollar. And they've got a guy under contract. Is he a good player? Absolutely. Is he better than Chris Lindstrom, who got $6 million more per year? Absolutely. But he put pen to paper, and so he's got to do it. And you just can't give everybody who's unhappy a new contract, or else there's no money for Micah Parsons. There's no money for Tony Pollard. Right? You got to get those guys deals.
Michael, and that's another part of what Jerry Jones said. He said, like, he talked about how if you just redo everyone's contract, you're never going to be able to sign and pay everyone. And he said, for when it comes to Martin specifically, he's been at the top of the money all the way through, drafted high, got a lot of money early, and has got a lot of money over the years. It's just hard to get it all. So he's saying, you know, you're a great player. You've been paid like a great player, but we have other great players that are coming up that we have to be able to pay too. He's set to make $14 million in 2023, so it is around six or seven less than those top guys who you mentioned, Lindstrom in Atlanta, Quentin Nelson in Indy at the top of that list, about $20 million. But he's still a top eight paid player at the position, Michael. It's not like he's hurting for cash here.
Right. What's happened, Stormy, is we've taken this basketball mentality into football. Now, the rules are different. The rules are way different in football than they are in basketball. But the players are trying to dictate to these owners. And the one thing we know about the NFL is the players will never dictate to the owners like the NBA players have dictated to their owners. That's not going to change. And I think that's why you see Jim Irsay and Jerry Jones come straight out and say it. Because they're not going to let the players run the league, especially when it's been collectively bargained.
Right. These are the things that have been agreed upon. Last season, Zach Martin gave up just 3 sacks, 96% pass block win rate, 8th in the league, 73.8% run block win rate. He is a very, very good player, but costing himself $50,000 a day at this point. We got what's on Michael's mind and some more training camp burning questions when we return on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you tormented by the transfer portal? Coaching carousel got you down or confused? Well, we are here for you. Let the 2023 VSiN College Football Betting Guide get you ready for this upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview Magazine has season win total picks and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create your own power ratings model, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Eumann's preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to know to be ready for kickoff. College Football Betting Guide comes out Thursday and is one of many benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. We will have Matt Eumann's join the program a little bit later on in hour two. We've got some college football that we're going to end this hour with as well, but we'll stick to the NFL for now, Michael, because it is time for what's on Michael's mind as training camps roll on. What's got your brain searching for information right now? What's going on?
Well, you know what? Like, to me, there's certain injuries that we hear about that creates a stir, right? Jalen Ramsey down in Miami, that prompted Eli Apple to come in. But the one that kind of hit me today was Seattle, which we know Seattle wants to run the football. And Charbonnet, their second-round pick from UCLA, is injured, and there's no timeline for him to come back. That doesn't sound good, right? And then Kenneth Walker gets injured. So is DJ Dallas going to be their only back? I mean, at some point, Kareem Hunt's got to get a job somewhere. Or does Dalvin Cook come into play here?
Right.
You know, I think to me, the one thing Dalvin Cook hasn't signed is because he's looking at the market and saying, you know, where, if an injury happens, somebody will get desperate, and desperate teams pay more money. So what's on my mind is that this running back market, for all we're talking about, there are some injuries out there that are effective, and Seattle, being a team that wants to run the ball, needs to figure out what they're going to do depending on how long these guys are out for.
Yeah, and a number of backs still available, to your point. Dalvin Cook, Kareem Hunt, Ezekiel Elliott, Leonard Fournette. Like, there are a lot of them out there looking for opportunities. With Kenneth Walker's injury, he's considered week to week with a groin. And Zach Charbonnet missed two practices now with shoulder discomfort. Walker finished second in the voting last year for Offensive Rookie of the Year. And Charbonnet, an up-and-coming back himself, 52 overall pick for him to be their number two guy. Seattle is a team in general that, like, a lot of people have optimism for. So this is probably one of those things you're like,
I do too. I have great optimism for them. I think they've had a really good offseason. And I think when you break down their roster, I think they've improved themselves defensively. I think they've improved themselves offensively. I mean, look, this team last year had the guts and the courage to start two rookies at tackles. And Cross and Lucas will be better this year just because they're no longer rookies. And they count on their run game to be a huge factor. And so I think by adding the receivers, you know, by having good running backs, I think they can be better. I mean, Jones, the kid they signed as a three technique from Denver, gives them a lot of help inside. So I think this is an up-and-coming team. And Jigba is a great slot receiver from USC, and I think he'll make a huge difference for Metcalf and Lockett on the outside. So, and then Noah Fant. I mean, this team's got good offensive skill. They just need that running back.
Yes, sir. And they thought that they had him, but now dealing with some of these injuries, how long do they end up lasting, and what are they potentially willing to bring into that running back room? San Francisco 49ers are the odds-on favorite in the NFC West, but Seattle sitting there plus 195, season win total sitting at a 9.5. And as we continue running down the list of all the teams in the NFL this season and our burning training camp questions, Elliot has us looking at some teams with high expectations. So why don't we keep it in the division and talk about that 49ers team? We know that Brock Purdy is out there at training camp, been there from day one. He's not considered having restrictions. He's going to throw, you know, 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on, 1 day off. So I guess technically you could think of that as a pitch count. But when he's on the field, he is playing at his best. So I think the big question when it comes to the 49ers right now is whether it's quarterback, who ends up being quarterback number two, and does Nick Bosa's contract get figured out?
Well, I think let's start with Nick Bosa first. That'll get figured out. They know they need Nick Bosa to be the best team they can be. And so they'll get that figured out. They have a quarterback not under a high-priced contract, so that's not an issue. They have to dedicate their dollars to him. I think if you're San Francisco and you're going to training camp, you're concerned about staying healthy. That's number one, right? You want to basically stay healthy. You need to do that. And you've got to see if McKivitz can play the right tackle position. Colton McKivitz is a kid who was drafted in 2000 in the fifth round from West Virginia. He's going to get a chance to be the starter at right guard, at right tackle. Can he fill in for Mike McGlinchey, who got a huge contract to go to Denver? And then really a lot of this is, can we stay healthy? I mean, can we stay healthy in the secondary? Can we stay healthy in on the offensive line? And, you know, we're not going to see a lot of these guys in the preseason. McCaffrey's right. Not going to play. Debo, who looks sensational. I mean, he's been tweeting. He's been sending pictures of what he's done to himself.
Kyle
I mean, he looks great.
Kyle Shanahan saying, I've never had a grown man send me more pictures of himself without a shirt on than Debo Samuel. But he's been getting after it. He was really disappointed in his performance a year ago, said it was awful. The contract stuff for him, he felt was a negative. And so this year, going full force to be the best that he can be. When it comes to Brock Purdy, Michael, do you think that he can pick up where he left off before the injury?
Yeah, I think there's no question. And I think too, for the 49er team, what they have to enjoy is the not having to deal with who's the quarterback, right? They know who the quarterback is. They know who's the leader in their huddle. He proved it last year. He was sensational, even though Garoppolo was really good too. Both quarterbacks play well. Garoppolo, unfortunately, got hurt. But that pressure of not having to deal with, who's our quarterback, or every practice is monitored based on how Trey Lance. That settles the team down a little bit, and I think that certainly will help them. And look, they just got to, if they stay healthy and Purdy plays to the level that he played last year, all he's got to do is get the ball to Ayuk, get the ball to Samuel, get the ball to McCaffrey, get the ball to Elijah Mitchell. You know, just take the profits and get the ball to Kittle. They're good. They're really good. And defensively, you know, they know how to play from in front. And Kyle has to really say to himself, I can't afford to get quarterbacks hurt. Like last year, they went through how many quarterbacks? It's funny. Mike McDaniel did the same thing in Miami. Their protection schemes are not drop back passes. They got to do a better job of protecting a quarterback, both programs.
You mentioned that Brock Purdy is a quarterback that they are going to have continuity. They know who their guy is. And he, in a situation where he needed to step it up, did. Keeping with that theme, Jalen Hurts, very similar situation. Going into last year, had a ton of question marks about how he was going to lead a team that had a lot of weapons around him. Ends up finishing second in NFL MVP voting, and the Philadelphia Eagles compete for a Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. They did not end up on that winning end. And because of how well that they did last year, though, they lose both of their coordinators. How do you think that they respond here off the Super Bowl performance and losing such key pieces to what they do, but also promoting within?
Well, I think to me the challenge will be not Hurts as much. They are who they are. Their offense is a six-pack offense. They signed Mariota to be the backup, which tells you the they don't want to have two alternate offenses like they did when Minshew had to play against New Orleans, right? You know, or Minshew against Dallas. That they want to be able to have continuity. And those two games, think about it, those two games were the lowest running total games of the season for the Eagles. They had 87 yards against Dallas in that game and only 67, which was the lowest output rush for their offense in the season. So I think to me, they're going to be a six-back team. I think the question is where are they defensively in terms of, are some of these older guys that they've signed back, you know, are they Fletcher Cox? Is he still going to be a good player? Is Brendan Graham still going to be a good player? I mean, that's the question. Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis, a young player, two deep Georgia defensive tackles, and then they have new linebackers. N'Kobe Dean is going to play in there. They lost T.J. Edwards. So there's a lot of question marks in terms of the defense. Slay, I mean, I know they signed both Slay and Bradbury to bring them back. Are they going to be healthy, and can they play and cover as they're over 30? I think it's more the defensive concerns, and I think the offense will especially run effectively all throughout.
The win total for the Philadelphia Eagles, 11.5 in the division, minus 115, the number there in that NFC East. High expectations yet again. And I don't know if you saw this, Michael, but Jalen Hurts, the background on his phone right now is a photo of him after last year's Super Bowl with KC-colored red and yellow confetti all around him. That's the background that he looks at every single day that he opens his phone, is that moment.
Well, you never forget a Super Bowl loss, and one that he really, you know, cost him a little bit, in the sense he fumbles that ball in the quarterback draw. He's trying to put the ball in his other hand. That gets them back in the game. Mm-hmm. You know, that gets them back into the game. And, you know, and that really helped. That 7 points was essentially started. I mean, because remember, they're down 10 at halftime, the Kansas City Chiefs, and they come back and close it. And then, of course, the Eagles defense couldn't stop them.
I mean, and Jalen Hurts was tremendous in that game, but it's the little things, right, that end up being the game-changing moments. We have to take a quick break here, but we'll wrap up hour one on the Lombardi Line next, turning our attention to college football. Looking at the importance of stability and having your quarterback return, your coaches return, how that might impact teams in 2023.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for the two of you to earn a $100 bonus when you sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. All you have to do is sign into your BetMGM account, click the Refer a Friend program. That'll send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state that you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll get their $100 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with that bonus and the wager's settled, you get your $100 bonus as well. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Massachusetts, Mississippi, and Nevada. Alongside Michael Lombardi, I'm Stormy Bonantoni as this Monday edition of the Lombardi Line rolls on. And for as fun of a month as July is, Michael, with training camps opening up in the NFL, we have media days for college football. I'm so glad that tomorrow we're going to be turning the page to August, because that means preseason games, and with college football, yep, actual games, because 0 week coming up at the end of the month, we're finally going to have meaningful things that we can bet on. And our college football betting guide here at VSiN is coming out this Thursday, which is going to get folks set up for everything you need. The NFL guide already out there, but I'm so excited to actually have meaningful events that are football related we can actually get in, yeah, on here soon.
No question. You know, college just jumps right into it. I mean, what? I think Rutgers opens up with Minnesota. They go right into the Big Ten schedule. So there's, I mean, there's a lot of kind of gimme games, but then there's some good. Well, we got Florida State, LSU again this year. You know, we got Utah, Florida. So, some teams jump into it. Some teams put their toe in the water, but it is pretty good to have it back, and I'm certainly looking forward to it.
And speaking of some teams jumping into it, our guy Steve Mackinnon has a great article that folks are going to be able to read once they get the college football betting guide later on this week, talking about teams' stability and how that's going to impact teams moving forward, particularly early in the season. He talks about teams that have returning, whether like head coach, quarterback, returning starting production, all of these different elements, and that he targets the first 4 weeks of the season specifically to see where he can find some mismatches on the schedule for teams that have this returning production against teams that maybe don't, which I thought was a really interesting discussion overall. Because, Michael, you know, you've been on a number of teams in your history in the NFL, and some of them do have a number of returning production and continuity as your coaching staff, continuity at the quarterback position versus teams that are kind of rebuilding and figuring it out. And it's a big difference.
It really is a huge difference, especially at the quarterback position and the head coach and who's calling the plays and understanding, like, how do we want to run this? What do we want to do? What's the strength, right? Everything about football is scouting inside out, not outside in. So when you know that J.J. McCarthy at Michigan does these three things really well, and you know Blake Corum is really good at doing these three things, and you know that you've got really good receivers that have proven on the field, whether it's Cornelius Johnson or Darius Clemens, whomever it is, right? Mm-hmm. You know Michigan has a sense of all their players, so they can build on what they did well last year and eliminate what they didn't do, and they had a whole offseason to do it, and it gives you a great advantage, because oftentimes new teams, they don't realize who they are until about the fourth or fifth game of the season, and then it's too late in college football.
I think Michigan's an interesting example here, and we'll pull this graphic up of the list of notable college football teams that are returning their head coach, quarterback, and coordinators, but Michigan at the top of it. Whereas you look at in the college football odds for who's going to win a national championship this year, the teams that are at the top in Georgia and Ohio State both are missing their quarterback. So could that be an additional advantage for a team like Michigan or for a team like USC that's trying to take that next step and make a college football playoff and contend? But for Michigan, you know, coming off a 12-0 regular season, won their second straight Big Ten championship, win total 10.5, very high expectations for this team, but rightfully so because of not only the talent but the continuity. A couple of teams in there that I wanted to point out as well. Kansas State, their win total 7.5. Texas Tech, their win total 7.5. And Kansas at 5.5. And you're like, okay, Stormy, like, why are you pointing out those teams? That doesn't make any sense to me. Well, I was doing some research this morning, and the top five teams last year in college football against the spread all had returning production over 70% and all had, I'll say, relatively low expectations of win totals at that 7.5 mark or less. Tulane, 71% of their returning production ended the season 12-2 straight up, and ATS, their win total was 6. Oregon State, 72% returning. 10-3 straight up, 11-2 against the spread. Their season win total, 5.5. The list goes on and on. So I think it's a good thought process going into the season to see if you can find maybe some of those diamonds in the rough with all of this returning production or continuity at the most important positions and coaches with a slightly lower win total and see where you can find some opportunity.
No question. And I think to me, that's where you have to make a living in college football is find the gaps, right? Mm-hmm. Find the places where you think there could be a gap. And it goes the other way too, Stormy. It goes when the teams don't have continuity right. And they don't have, like, I was looking at Steve's article and like, I love the Mac because I don't think the book is in tune to the Mac as well as they are later in the season. So Kansas State, you know, Sean Lewis goes to Colorado to be the offensive coordinator. They returned four players from last year's team. They couldn't stop anybody defensively last year. They were good offensively. That quarterback went to UCLA. I mean, that's how good he was. And so, you know, I think to me, they're going to have a hard time getting it back together again. And I know they hired Kenny Burns from Minnesota, but it's going to take him some time to figure it out. It's the same thing at Colorado. There's a lot of pieces moving around for Deion that's going to take some time to get it back on track.
Yeah, Colorado's an interesting situation because you have all the pomp and circumstance and flash around Coach Prime coming and obviously Shador at quarterback and all of the transfers that are coming in and hype, but it's still a season win total of 4 or fewer. Wins based on the any book that you're looking at right now
because of the reality of the situation. You covered Colorado last year. They were horrible. Now, I know all those kids aren't on the team anymore, but it's hard to have a new team in college football. It's hard. I mean, this is going to be a brand new team with a lot of moving pieces.
Yeah, it's like the players that you carry over, okay, maybe some of them are the best of the worst, but it was an awful, awful season for Colorado the last handful of years. And then you're just bringing in players from kind of all over the place. And how are you going to have that chemistry with people and players that don't know each other? So I think it's going to be a progression. I think it's a very positive thing that you have a coach that knows how to get the most out of their players and a bright future and moving on to the Big 12, all of these different things. But as far as year one, probably going to be tough sledding. I would say similar situation that we have. It will keep it in the Pac-12 for now. Arizona State. Kenny Dillingham, new head coach, after everything that went down with Herm Edwards and the coaching situation and just the influx and mass exodus, rather, of players leaving the program.
No question. And there's the gap, right? We've got to find the gap. We've got to be able to look for, you know, where is there somewhere where we keep looking at scheduling and all that. Like, I love Texas Tech. I know they're on the list of teams keeping it together. I don't know who's going to be the starting quarterback. I thought the Morton kid was really good. I thought he has a chance to be so spectacular as a freshman last year when he came in off the bench. I don't know if he'll win the job this year, but I'm anxious to see. But Joey McGuire's done a nice job recruiting out there at West Texas, and I think they're going to be better than most people think they are. And based on Steve McKinnon's write-up, they've got continuity.
Yes, exactly. Win total sitting at 7.5 for Texas Tech. The over and even money price under juice slightly to the -125. So if you can get that, it's always nice if you can get that plus sign on an over, right? 8-5 season a year ago, but returning a lot of production. According to McKinnon's article, just 27 of the 133 FBS teams this season are returning their quarterback, head coach, and both coordinators. That's pretty shocking to me that it's only 20%, but I mean, that just goes to show, I mean, transfer portal, players moving on, but to have all of those things together is impactful. I know we only have about a minute here, but is there like a team that reminds you that you've been on where like things were clicking and everybody was back?
Yeah, I think the year we went to the Super Bowl in 2002, we lost to Tampa. But we had everybody back. We added Sam Adams, a really good defensive tackle, late in training camp. And it kind of gave me the sense we're going to be really good. Our offensive line was good. We had everybody back from the Tuck game. And we had a new coach in Bill Callahan, but it was continuity that we had. And you just had a sense of confidence that you were going to be really good. And I think that gives you, you know, that gives you the feeling that if we just continue to improve, we're going to be good.
It's kind of like the A-team, right? Like you love it when a plan comes together. We're going to take a quick time out here, but we will have plenty of college football talk again in hour two when Matt Eumanns joins the program. He has some specific win totals he likes. Also broke down the Pac-12 and Big 12 for the College Football Betting Guide. But when we return, step into my office, Michael. Some people need some advice and a talking to.